and thanks for tuning in to another episode of the BC Association of School Psychologists podcast. We are so excited to bring you helpful ideas for your practice, supported by experts and research. Today, we are excited to talk with Lisa Kelly-Bentz and Vern Davis.
Lisa is the program director of the School Psychology Program at the University of Nebraska, Omaha, and former president of the National Association of School Psychologists, also known as NASP.
Vern is a school psychologist and was named the Nebraska School Psychologist Association School Psychologist of the Year in the year 2022. Before we begin with our formal content, we'd first like to take this time to acknowledge the unceded territories where we are learning and unlearning and joining you from. I am joining you with deep gratitude and respect from the ancestral and unceded lands of the Musqueam, Squamish Nation, and Tsleil-Waututh Nation.
And I am Kathleen Cherry, and I am joining you from the traditional territories of the Coast Salish, the Sauk, Chialnu, Nuchalnuth, and Pechida Nations, as well as the traditional territory of the Esquimalt and Songhees Nations.
We are so excited to have both of you here with us today.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks.
We know both of you have extensive backgrounds in a lot of areas, and today we were hoping to focus on something that we haven't yet spent a lot of time on, which in particular is self-care. So the BC Association of School Psychologists, we, BCASP, are joining the College of Psychologists in BC. And, you know, we've gotten a heightened awareness of a lot of ethical issues, one of the important ones being self-care. Kathleen?
And as I thought about this topic, I realized that although self-care, that term is very common, I didn't really feel I had a good understanding of it. And I'm wondering if you could help us to understand what self-care is and means within the context of school psychology.
I think that's really important. And I think there's so many misconceptions in what self-care is, and especially in school psychology. So maybe I'll just start by framing and then Vern, jump in with this because I know you have lots and lots of ideas here. But I frame things in terms of personal self-care and professional self-care. So we have what we can do in our personal life to enrich it, to enhance what we do, feel good, do good things. But it's also applying that to our professional lives. And I think that sometimes the misunderstood and missing piece is how, like, what does self-care look like in a school building, you know, when you're a school psychologist delivering services. And so a lot of it is taking some of that that you learn in your personal self-care life and applying it to what you do in your work life, but certainly not all of it. And so what can you do in your day-to-day work life that helps you cope with the stress, deal with the day-to-day obstacles, and really competes with joy of the workplace?
Yeah. And we talk about self-care as being self-aware, right? You have that awareness of what do you need? Right. So we think about self-care outside of work. And, you know, the common thoughts about self-care are go get your nails done, go to the spa, get a massage, whatever. But obviously we can't do that at work. And if we could, I need to know where you work because then I will be showing up. But when you're thinking about yourself at work, think about what do you need to be as close to your best self as possible. We can't do that every single day in every single way, but if you set yourself up for success every day, set up your space, your desk, your office, your surroundings, the people you work with, if you structure that as much as you can, the way you know you need, that's self-care at work.
That's so good to know. And I'll bet, and we can talk a little bit more about this later, that that might have something to do with preventing burnout as well.
Yes. For sure. And we know that burnout is when you're feeling overwhelmed, right? When you're feeling detached from your job, when you're feeling negative, when you're having negative feelings about your job. And Lisa alluded to this earlier when she said, how do we find joy in our jobs? And when you feel like you're not getting stuff done, that's where what we can use as the definition for burnout, right? And so when you look at those three things, feeling overwhelmed, feeling detached, feeling ineffective, is it ineffective or ineffective? Ineffective. Does it matter? Mm-hmm. If you're feeling ineffective, then what are those, how do we address those three areas? Again, for ourselves. There's lots of things out there that talk about how to address burnout, how to, burnout in the workplace and all these things. But really, it is individualized. It is something that I need to think about for me. What do I need in order to feel positive about work, in order not to feel overwhelmed, in order to feel like I got something done every day? How do I set up my space? Again, I talk a lot about structure. Structure your space, structure your time, structure your day. How do I do that so that I am not feeling that burnout? Would you kind of agree with that, Lisa?
I absolutely. And I actually will include in that structure personal boundaries.
Mm.
What is it that is, again, filling you, but then what's depleting you? And I think we all have a different point where the depletion takes over. There's just too much. Vern, I know you've had one of those weeks where that depletion has happened. And so when is it that you have to impose those personal boundaries? Like, I simply can't do anymore. That to me is one of the quintessential definitions of self-care in the workplace is, you know, we're school psychologists. People come to us with a lot of needs. Kids need us, teachers, families. And sometimes we can get that overload where we are not doing anybody any good. Mm-hmm. And so where is your tipping point? Where is that place that you have to say, I can't, or I will get to that later, or let me come find you tomorrow and let's talk. But right now it's not the right time. And in your head, you're saying, because I have nothing left to give. Your out loud voice is, I'm really booked right now and I have other things I have to accomplish, but I am not going to forget you and your need. I'll come find you. But that is that boundary setting that is so necessary in structuring your own self-care. Because we all know eventually what that is, what that looks like.
And one of the things I feel like in society, we don't do very well is teach that that is okay. Right? That's why we struggle so much with self-care and why it's such a big topic right now is because we haven't taught people that it is okay to set those boundaries. And we haven't taught that clear is kind. That when you say, this is what I need, this is how I'm feeling, this is what I can do right now, this is what I need to put on hold, that when you're just very clear like that, that is kindness. You're being kind to yourself, but you're also being kind and respectful to the person that you're speaking to. And we definitely could do a better job teaching that to our students, to our grad students, to our early practitioners, and just remembering it for ourselves in the workplace for sure.
And all that goes under that bundle of prevention. You know, you're preventing the burnout that we're all talking about when you are able to set those boundaries to structure your own self-care. That right there is burnout prevention, because we know the compassion fatigue comes from overextending ourselves, having too much. And so again, defining the too much, we are then saying, I'm going to be available not just tomorrow, but next week, next year. I'm going to be back at this job because I set the boundaries and I prevented myself from burning out and saying, I can't do this anymore. I'm going to go work at a bank. You know, I could work at a bank, but you know, that kind of thing, that like, because this is a heavy profession in so many ways. So, and I will also say part of self-care, definition to me is finding that joy
in
our and defining that, because we talk a lot about the burnout side, about what empties us. But the joy side and identifying those, the having the laughs, the smiles, the, oh my gosh, I can't believe that kid said that. That made my day.
Yes.
And I think one thing that you, Lisa and Vern, have just mentioned that kind of I'd like to connect to, it's an idea by Liz Wiseman about burnout, and that burnout really comes about when you feel like you're not having the impact that you would hope to in your job or in your workplace, right? And I think impact very much ties to also this idea of joy, right? We do our jobs because we want to be able to create that impact by helping the students that we serve, by helping the families, by working collaboratively with the teachers. And when we can't be our best selves in doing all of that, well, that oftentimes is very much linked to when we start feeling burnt out.
Yeah. And I think too, yeah, we get that joy from successes. We also have to recognize we're not always going to have the successes. And again, that can lead to the burnout there. And so how do we manage those? Oh, I put together a really great intervention plan or a really great counseling session, but boy, that student just did not relate to me today. And I am not successful. You know, what am I going to do for myself after that to say, I was not successful, and that's okay.
Yes, that's the piece of it too, is that acknowledgement of our feelings when you're thinking about, you know, it rather than saying, well, I'm not going to think about that right now, or I'm going to dismiss these emotions, that actually makes things worse. When we acknowledge, well, that didn't work. When we acknowledge, I am disappointed that my principal does not want to fill in the blank. I feel sad that this student, walked out of group today. I feel fill in the blank, right? We teach our students that we teach them the color, the emotion wheel. We teach them all these things. But again, how do we put that in practice for ourselves to say my feelings about whatever it is happening around me are valid and important, and I should acknowledge them and maybe talk about them, maybe do something about them, rather than saying, I'm fine. It's okay. I'm fine. No worries. I'm fine. As the flames are coming out of your ears, right?
Absolutely. And I know we wanted to, while we've got this topic, kind of just dive deeper into it, right? And Kathleen, what do you think about asking the next question, just in terms of building upon the momentum we've got?
Absolutely. And one of the things, what I'm sort of hearing is that sometimes I find it very challenging to come up with the how to do that, the self-care piece. And you've come up with a lot of great ideas. And as I was hearing you, I was actually thinking about with our students who are so careful with like the 5-point scale or zones of regulation or whatever, to identify those, how we feel in green and or yellow, and be very clear about those first signs that's when we can intervene. And it seems to me that with self-care, we have to be very aware of the first signs that depletion is happening, as opposed to what I feel with myself tends to happen is that I'm kind of up in the red zone. That just came to me that it's both that individual individual recognition and knowing those first signs and knowing what to do for yourself personally with those first signs. So I guess any ideas sort of coming off that as to sort of things we can do to make sure, other than what you've mentioned, to make sure that we're taking those preventative steps and we're not shifting up into that red zone?
Well, I have some very practical examples of things that, of ways that a person can set themselves up for success that work for me. For example, at the end of every day, I clear my desk. So I put everything in files. I put all my pens in the pen holders. I straighten everything up so that when I come in the morning, I have a beautiful clean desk. I'm not greeted by clutter and chaos and like overwhelmed with all these things I have to do. That's just one thing. Other things that I might do. So Lisa knows this about me, that I, every Sunday, I write down all of my outfits for the week. And that seems like, now how does that help you with work? Well, several ways. One, I'm not a morning gal, right? I'm not a morning person. So on Sunday night, I go into my closet and I stand there with a notebook and a pen and paper, and I write down all of the clothes, all of the outfits that I will wear Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And I stick to that plan. I do not stray from it. And that helps me be on time. It helps me have less decision fatigue. I already decided it. I don't need to think about it. I know what's going on in the whole week. That forces me to look at my calendar. What meetings do I have coming up? So I know, do I need to dress more formally this day or that day? And that really gives me a good start to the day. It's done. Little things also, like making your lunch the day before. We think about it in my house as, what will make your tomorrow self happy? What will support your tomorrow self? Sometimes your today self is kind of a jerk and lazy and tired and doesn't want to pick out the clothes, make the lunch, make the decisions for tomorrow. And you think, I'm going to save it. I'll do that tomorrow. But then your tomorrow self is like, why didn't I do it before? So thinking about what's going to make your tomorrow self happy is another kind of way that I frame it, to get myself to be more structured, in that self-care as it pertains to work. Lisa, do you have some tips, ideas?
Well, what we always love in these discussions is we're different, because like when Vern says she plans her outfits, that would be like the opposite of self-care for me. Because for me, getting up and saying, what mood am I in? What am I going to wear? And it's kind of a process. But what I really find, like, my priorities are, I need to get a good night's sleep, if at all possible. We know it doesn't always happen, but I'm always going to try. I go to bed early and then I get up early so that I can have my coffee and relax, feeding my dog and just having some of that quiet time before the day starts. That's not for everybody, but that's for me. I'm doing Duolingo Spanish. I do 15 minutes of that every morning just because it fills me. It fills me up. And so that's my planning on Sunday, is what groceries do I need to have in the house so I don't have to go to the grocery store, because I'm going to dedicate my hours, my energy hours, to work during the work week. And that's another thing I think we have to think about. We only have so many energy hours in our day. Where are we putting those? And some days, Monday, I know I have to put a lot of energy hours into class and supervision, all that. So my energy hours aren't going to go into a workout, grocery, whatever. So I kind of look at my week, and that's what's helpful for me, is to structure that and just say, what do I have coming up? So I think both of us really pointing out how I think Sundays are, or whatever day you choose, choose a day where you do some planning and some organizing, and think forward in whatever way works for you.
Mm-hmm. And protect your those times. So Lisa, you're saying, you know, I get up and I do some Duolingo and I have coffee. That's protected time. You're not going to give that time away to someone else or something else. That's protected. That's how I feel about my workouts. Those are protected times. Nothing else can be scheduled in those times. That's for me. And thinking about protecting your peace, protecting your time. A lot of times we hear people say, well, I don't have time. Yes, we do. Everybody has time. We have the time. We don't take the time. You can't make time, right? Time cannot be made. It is how it is. It's linear, right? We can't make it, but you can take it. And again, it's something that we don't teach very well, that it is okay for you to take the time that you need for things that are good and positive for you. And for some of us, that means blocking it out. We have to say from this time to this time, because it can't be whenever we want. We have to say, I have from 8 to 9, and that's the time that I will fill in the blank, because all things are happening all around that, that are not optional, but also my time isn't optional.
I like that idea. And I love the idea of a gift to your tomorrow self. That proactive piece. But there's a joyful, there's a spark of joy in that gift giving to that connects with me. So thank you for that phrase.
There was such good phrases that you both have shared with us. They're your gifts to us, and we appreciate them so much. I realize with the phrase of what would make your tomorrow self happy, I was thinking about it. I'm like, oh, you know, maybe I could also use that when I'm seeing and counseling clients too, because what a great way to have that, start that conversation about self-care with them, and also on the side, teach planning skills.
Yes.
I think you bring up an excellent point too about kind of giving away our self-care strategies, because our young people, I don't think they understand a lot about self-care. It may or may not be modeled for them at home. And so I do believe that it is a wonderful conversation to have, not only at the high school. I know, Vern, you're at a high school, but even younger. What do you do to take care of yourselves? And it can kind of segue into a lot of the emotion regulation with our young children too, just to give them strategies of self-care, age appropriate, of course, but I think it's really helpful. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yes.
So I know that I read in research that there is some research suggesting that the somewhat restricted role that school psychologists sometimes experience can contribute to burnout. And I'm just wondering, that's something, a key interest of mine. And I'm just wondering if you could speak to that, or if you're aware of that research.
The restricted role piece is something that in Nebraska, we are really trying to combat, where we have been put in kind of the box of test and place, where we are evaluators only and we're not seen as mental health professionals. So that is something that we really are working on, because we know that we're doing it. And to acknowledge that expanded role is very important for practitioners in our state. And we want to make sure that we are saying, we know that you're not only sitting down with kids and providing a cognitive evaluation or an academic evaluation. We are sitting down and doing groups. We're talking to teachers, we're doing consultation. There's a big role. And I think the burnout piece of being constricted is that lack of acknowledgement and saying, I'm doing all these things and no one appreciates it. No one knows. And so I know that in our state, in our organization, we are really working hard to make sure that our psychologists feel like, no, we see you, we hear you, and we want to acknowledge that. And we would like our state districts to acknowledge that as well. Do you think, Lisa?
I do. I think occasionally it can happen where in graduate school, we are training on the full practice model, and yet some districts only have certain expectations and place such a heavy workload on only testing, which it does lead to frustration if you're trained for so much more. So yes, what you're saying, Vern, about the acknowledgement is so important. I'm going to add here too that I think that the work, and I know Vern's doing a lot of this in our state and several other people, that work of advocacy at the state level, I put that in self-care, because and some people even call it more of the radical self-care, when you're really getting out there and saying, I'm doing things to make things better for myself and my colleagues and the people I know who aren't getting to do the role they want or getting the acknowledgement. And so advocacy is an underutilized term in the self-care genre, in my personal opinion. So,
yeah, I really like that, Lisa. I like that you included advocacy in that. I hadn't really thought of it that way before, but it really does. That is something that for me fills my bucket, as we were talking about earlier, so that I can be ready to pour into others. And I think we don't acknowledge too that doing things for others, research says doing things for other people makes us feel better. And that can be at work. It can be outside of work, so that you have more energy, as Lisa says, to give to your students and your staff. But I really like that, thinking about advocacy as being a way to not only support your profession, but to care for yourself.
Mm-hmm. I think it's that giving a voice and having a voice and doing things that will allow you to be heard as an individual and a professional.
Yes.
Absolutely. In addition to filling your cup that way, I would also wonder if just staying silent and just kind of chugging along, albeit when things are somewhat frustrating for you, that in itself can probably shorten your fuse even more, leading to quicker burnout, I'm guessing.
Yes, there's actually Maya Tamir and Iris Madison are doing research on this right now. They're talking about judging your emotions and how that hurts yourself, and how being silent, seething silently, actually is detrimental to your health. And they talk about different strategies that people can use to be more vocal, because not everyone feels like comfortable in that space, right? Not everyone feels comfortable being a voice or being an advocate. And they talk about emotional regulation and mental health as being huge pieces of self-care. But that seething in silence, I like that you brought that up, because it is research-based, detrimental to your health. And so thinking about how can you, what is a way for yourself to get that out? I'm just looking at my notes here, because they had some interesting ways that they talked about getting that out when that's maybe not something that you do. And they talked about the Cento exercise. I don't know if you've ever heard of this. And you do it with a journal or your favorite book. And it's trying to help you reframe old ideas in a new context. So you might pull your journal, let's say you're a journaler, and you look back at a journal that you had 3 years ago, and you open up a page and you take one line out of it. And then you pull a different journal, open up a page and take another line, and you create a collage poem with the different lines from your journal. It's composed entirely, so a real Cento poem is composed entirely from lines from various poems. So you pull from A.A. Mill, E.E. Cummings, I don't know, I'm making up poets' names, I don't know. But so a Cento exercise for us would be using a journal or our favorite books or I don't know, favorite movie lines and putting them in poetry and looking at them and thinking, okay, what does this mean for me today? What does this mean for me now? It's a way to stimulate thinking about yourself, a way to stimulate thinking about your feelings, and a way of self-expression. So I thought that was really cool that they talked about that. I'm gonna try it in group.
I love that. That's a very creative. And I just wanted to just swing back to that advocacy piece. And I'm just realizing that one of the arguments, or not arguments, but sometimes self-care is being given a bit of a bad rap, in that sometimes there's this expectation that we have to self-care ourselves out of normal feelings in a bad situation. And it seems to me that yes, we do have to self-care, but that advocacy role helps to give that energy to express one's needs and try and develop some momentum to change that situation. So I just looped back to liking the concept of tying self-care and advocacy.
I think there's a big, back to kind of the definition, there's such that misunderstanding that, oh, you do self-care and you're always going to feel great. Mm-hmm. And that is so unrealistic. And it's, you know, that whole thing, self-care isn't selfish, but then people interpret it that it's only in or directed. It's not externally directed. And so I think, again, this is where self-care misses, you know, it gets misrepresented. It's not a bad thing in and of itself, but public perception can be, oh, this is just a, you know, feel good movement that's not really helpful. It's going to go away. And that bothers me. And I always say, I don't care what we call it, but we have to keep doing this work. And within that advocacy, finding your place, finding your, what is it that you can do? Because when you're mentioning, not everybody's, you know, going to speak out and do the public persona to it, but can you write a letter? Can you support someone else who's doing it, doing the work? And so I think finding that space that works for you.
Yeah. And I like, Kathleen, what you said about we self-care ourselves out of normal emotions, and that's not what self-care is. That kind of leads to, Lisa, you talk about this a lot, toxic positivity versus feeling happy versus being optimistic, right? We don't want to self-care ourselves out of normal emotion. And that goes back to the being self-aware and being able to identify our emotions and sit with them and feel them and decide, okay, what do I want to do next based on how I feel?
We really put a good bad on the emotion.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, it's like, and it's not that, you know, if something bad happens to me, I should be feeling awful. I shouldn't be trying to feel happy. And so we need to align our emotions and model that for the students out in our schools. Absolutely. So that they're seeing appropriate reactions and getting some assistance from role models of how to do this. That is self-care. It's, yes, this was awful. And I need to feel all those feelings of anger, of that, to me, letting yourself feel everything is part of what we're talking about today.
Yeah.
The full range.
Mm-hmm. Those are really important words. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, Vern. I know for a very popular term that we've got here, the IEP stands for Individualized Education Plan. And we've heard that there is another way of understanding for these letters. Could you speak more to that?
So we do love our acronyms, don't we? And so quite a few years ago, when I was thinking about how do we kind of do a structure of our self-care? How do we make ourselves accountable? And I thought, well, the IEP is an accountability plan for kids. So I renamed it the Individual Energy Plan, because self-care does provide that energy that we need to get through the tough things, even through the fun things. You know, I think to me that is what one of the big benefits of self-care is, to have that energy. And so I kind of like to think of it like an IEP process, where you're saying, okay, what's the problem? What activities can we do within our self-care? And, you know, again, making this individual. So within my self-care, what can I do? What activity is realistic? We do that with kids too. You know, it has to be something that's available and research supported, et cetera. I also think it's very important for us, as we are going through that process, to think about, what are my assets and what are my barriers to this? And then, you know, develop some sort of plan, develop some accountability. Vern and I laugh a lot that we're accountable to each other, because we talk about self-care, and I don't think I would be doing as much self-care if we didn't talk about it this much. But, you know, and having a way to celebrate. But, you know, just something simple, like if you're thinking, oh, you know, I want to write, you mentioned journaling. I like to do a gratitude journal. One way that made that work for me, I'd forget, you know, that was the barrier. I'd forget to write. But I have my iPad with me in the evening, and so I downloaded an online journal. I write in my journal every evening because of it. That then became something that works. So you have to think, what's going to work? And if you're coming up with something so complicated that you can't figure out how to get past the barriers, then pick a different self-care activity to do. Don't try to force it. That's something else. We should never force self-care. This should be something that is that brings joy. I get joy every evening when I think back, okay, I may have had a really crummy day, but I get to think about the good things that happened. And it's not toxic positivity to me. It is reframing my day sometimes. Sometimes
absolutely.
It's easy.
It is so powerful to be able to reframe. It's so powerful to be able to just express gratitude. And I've heard from some research that one of the best parts about expressing gratitude and the positive kind of thoughts that come with it is also that there is an absence of negative thoughts, right?
Yes, absolutely. And don't you love that something that people have been doing for a while now has the research supporting that? Yes, expressing gratitude in whatever way you do it is supported by research. So yeah, it's one of those where the research is finally catching up with what many of us knew to be a truth in our lives. So.
But I like how you said, though, Lisa, in whatever way you do it, right? Mm-hmm. There are so many ways for us to be grateful. There are days when you're expressing gratitude for your body. There are days when you're expressing gratitude for the food that you eat. You're expressing gratitude for the people in your lives. And we all have different ways of doing that. The important thing to note is that we are doing that, and we find a way that works for us to do that.
And kids can do it. That's yeah. The other thing, that it's good for them to have those opportunities.
Thank you. Yeah, just talking to you, I've got so many thoughts, and I know, I think one of the self-care things for me is a morning walks with my dog, and I really enjoy listening to the birds and some of those small things, and really trying to be aware of them. And I think that gratitude piece. So certainly you've given us a lot to think about, and some really practical ideas as well. And as we wrap up, we always like to give our guests the opportunity to talk about anything you are currently exploring or you're really excited to talk about. So we wanted to give you that chance.
You want to go, Vern, or?
I don't have a lot of things that I want to necessarily share that like I'm doing, but I do want to encourage people to check out some podcasts that talk about workplace care. There's a great podcast called Radical Candor that talks a lot about at work, how you show up at work, things you can do differently at work, how to be a leader, those types of things. I love that podcast. And Lisa had mentioned about getting good sleep. And I know for a lot of us in the area of school psychology, that sometimes that can be difficult because it's hard to shut off your brain. And so I listen to sleep podcasts at night. And so I listen to Sleep With Me, which is really good, and Boring Books for Bedtime, which I love. She literally just reads books from like 18, whatever. She reads the Sears catalog. She reads, yes, I love it. It's so great, but it helps. So you talked about the absence of negative thoughts, right? That's what listening to something at night helps you to do. You're focused in on this other person's voice so that your own inner voice that's telling you how busy you are and all the things you can't forget gets pushed to the back, turned down so that you can relax your body and get sleep. So those are the plugs that I want to make. I love podcasts and I encourage you to check out some podcasts that will help you to care for yourself.
I love all those. I think too, one of the things that I thought about a lot and I want us to be able to support is that is our fellow educators in schools and these times where sometimes they're under attack for, you know, kids aren't doing as well as they should or whatever it is that they're experiencing. And sometimes I think that has led to some negativity in some schools and negative talk. And I'm hoping that what we can do is think about that the solution in schools, we may not be able to control the big solutions that we'd like to manage and control and getting more respect for our teachers and school psychologists, et cetera. But what can we manage? And we can manage the way we interact with each other, by taking care of ourselves. It helps us also help encourage others to do the same, not in a toxic way, but in a really positive, productive way, complementing each other. I think that's something that goes a really long way. So I look forward to finding more just basic, simple humanitarian solutions to some of our problems in education that we have.
Thank you.
Thank you both for sharing all those resources. And so this marks the end of our episode. Thanks again for sharing your time and expertise with us, Lisa and Vern. We so appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. A pleasure.
And to our listeners, stay tuned for our next episodes. Look to the show notes for resources, including the ones that were shared today. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Do rate and review us. And in the meantime, we'd love if you connected with us on our socials at BCAS Certified on Twitter and Instagram and BC Association of School Psychologists on Facebook. Thank you very much, everyone.